The following podcast contains advertising. To access an ad-free version of the Lawfare podcast, become a material supporter of Lawfare at patreon.com/lawfare. That's patreon.com/lawfare. Also, check out Lawfare's other podcast offerings, Rational Security, Chatter, Lawfare No Bull, and The Aftermath.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
I'm Elena Kagan, and this is the Lawfare Podcast, Bonus Edition, November 21st, 2019. The evening testimony on November 20th extended into the night, so we are bringing it to you today. The House Intelligence Committee heard from Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense Laura Cooper and Undersecretary of State David Hale. We've taken out all the grandstanding and all the repetition so that you can just listen to the portions of the testimony that you need to hear. It's the Lawfare Podcast Bonus Edition, Laura Cooper and David Hale versus the committee, with no bull.
That concludes my opening statement, but before answering your questions, there is one other matter I would like to address. I testified in a deposition before this committee and other committees on October 23rd, 2019. At that time, I was asked questions about what I knew about when the Ukrainian government may have learned about any hold on security assistance funds. I answered those questions based on my knowledge at that time. Since my deposition, I have again reviewed my calendar, and the only meeting where I recall a Ukrainian official raising the issue with me is on September 5th at the Ukrainian Independence Day celebration. I have, however, since learned some additional information about this subject from my staff. Prior to my deposition testimony, I avoided discussing my testimony with members of my staff or anyone other than my attorney to ensure that my deposition testimony was based only on my personal knowledge. My deposition testimony was publicly released on November 11th, 2019. Members of my staff read the testimony and have come to me since then and provided additional information. Specifically, on the issue of Ukraine's knowledge of the hold, or of Ukraine asking questions about possible issues with the flow of assistance, my staff showed me two unclassified emails that they received from the State Department. One was received on July 25th at 2:31 p.m. That email said that the Ukrainian Embassy and House Foreign Affairs Committee are asking about security assistance. The second email was received on July 25th at 4:25 p.m. That email said that the Hill knows about the FMF situation to an extent, and so does the Ukrainian embassy. I did not receive either of these emails. My staff does not recall informing me about them, and I do not recall being made aware of their content at the time. I do not have any additional information about precisely what the Ukrainians may have said, what may have been their source of information about a hold or any possible issues with the flow of assistance, or what the State Department officials may have told them. My staff also advised me in the last few days of the following additional facts that may be relevant to this inquiry. Again, my staff does not recall informing me about them, and I do not recall being made aware of this. On July 3rd at 4:23 p.m., they received an email from the State Department stating that they had heard that the CN is currently being blocked by OMB. This apparently refers to the congressional notification state would send for Ukraine FMF. I have no further information on this. On July 25th, a member of my staff got a question from a Ukraine embassy contact asking what was going on with Ukraine security assistance. Because at that time, we did not know what the guidance was on USAI. The OMB notice of apportionment arrived that day, but the staff member did not find out about it until later. I was informed that the staff member told the Ukrainian official that we were moving forward on USAI, but recommended that the Ukraine embassy check in with state regarding the FMF. Sometime during the week of August 6 to 10, a Ukraine embassy officer told a member of my staff that a Ukrainian official might raise concerns about security assistance in an upcoming meeting. My understanding is that the issue was not, in fact, raised. Again, I have no further information about what concerns about the security assistance Ukraine may have had at that time. My staff also recall thinking that Ukrainians were aware of the hold on security assistance during August, but they cannot pinpoint any specific conversations where it came up. My staff told me they are aware of additional meetings where they saw officials from the Ukrainian embassy in August, and they believe that the question of the hold came up at some point. But they told me they did not find any corresponding email or other records of those meetings. Consequently, neither they nor I know precisely when or what additional discussions may have occurred with the Ukrainians in the month of August. If I had more details on these matters, I would offer them to the committee, but this is the extent of additional information I have received since my deposition. Mr. Chairman, I welcome your questions. I will answer them to the best of my ability. Thank you.
I now recognize myself for 5 minutes. And I want to begin by asking you, Ms. Cooper, about what you just informed us of to make sure that I understand the import of what you're saying. As early as July 25th, the same day President Trump spoke with President Zelensky on the phone and asked for this favor, the same day that President Zelensky thanked the United States for its military support and signaled it was ready to purchase more javelins, on that date, you got inquiries, your staff got inquiries from someone at the Ukrainian embassy who was concerned about the status of the military assistance. Is that correct?
Sir, that's correct. I would say that specifically the Ukrainian embassy staff asked what is going on with Ukrainian security assistance.
And did that connote to you that they were concerned that something was in fact going on with it?
Yes, sir.
And you received, I guess your staff received more than one inquiry on that date. What was the nature of the other inquiry on July 25th?
Sir, that was the one inquiry to my staff, but the other points that I had raised were emails reflecting outreach to the State Department.
So the Ukrainian embassy was also contacting the State Department to find out about its portion of military assistance?
Yes, sir.
And was that similarly a concern about what's going on with our military aid?
It was similarly a question about what's going on with security assistance.
And your staff or one of the other department staff also heard in August additional inquiries from the Ukraine embassy about a potential holdup in the military assistance?
Sir, I want to be careful about how I phrase this. My staff recall having had meetings with Ukrainian embassy representatives during the month of August, and they believe that the topic came up at some point during those meetings, but they don't recall the precise date or specifically what the nature of the discussion was.
But your staff at least gleaned from those conversations that the Ukrainian embassy was aware that there was some kind of a hold on the assistance.
Sir, the way I would phrase it is that there was some kind of an issue. Yes.
You are now, Ms. Cooper, the third witness before our committee who has testified that the Ukrainians found out about a problem or a hold on the security assistance prior to it becoming public. But you're the first to indicate that that may go back as early as the date of the President's call with President Zelensky. Let me move to a related issue. In August, you testified at your deposition that you met with Kurt Volker, I believe it was on August 20th. The hold on security assistance was still in place. You testified that Ambassador Volker told you that if he could get Zelensky to make a public statement, quote, that would somehow disavow any interference in U.S. elections and would commit to the prosecution of any individuals involved in election interference, it might lift the hold on security assistance. Is that correct?
Sir, I believe that I testified that it was my inference that that would lift the hold on Ukraine's security assistance.
And that was your inference because at the time you were talking about the hold on security assistance?
That's correct. The first part of our conversation was about the hold on security assistance.
And it was during that portion of the conversation that he brought up the effort to get this public statement?
It was during that conversation. I'm not sure I would say it's during that part of the conversation.
What else did you discuss in the conversation?
The only two topics that I recall are the urgency of lifting the hold on security assistance and then him relaying this separate diplomatic effort that I had previously been unaware of.
So you didn't have any discussion about any White House meeting?
Sir, I don't recall specifically talking about the White House meeting, but I've had many conversations about the desire for the White House meeting, so it's likely that that was a part of the conversation.
But the two things you do recall are that you talked about the hold on security assistance and that he brought up this public statement that they wanted Zelensky to get that he thought might be useful.
That is correct, sir.
Yield to Mr. Ratcliffe.
Thank the gentleman for yielding. Ambassador Hale, Ms. Cooper, thank you both for being here. In his opening, Ranking Member Nunes referenced President Trump's general skepticism of providing aid and the amount of foreign aid being provided to foreign countries. Would you agree with that characterization, Ambassador Hale?
We've often heard at the State Department that the President of the United States wants to make sure that foreign assistance is reviewed scrupulously to make sure that it's truly in U.S. national interests and that we evaluate it continuously so that it meets certain criteria that the President's established.
And since his election, is it fair to say that President Trump has looked to overhaul how foreign aid is distributed?
Yes, the NSC launched a foreign assistance review process sometime, I think it was late August or early September 2018.
All right. And throughout both his campaign and his administration, President Trump has repeatedly sought to reframe American foreign policy in economic terms and, as he described, America first policy. And consistent with that, well before there was a whistleblower talking about a pause on aid to the Ukraine, the president had expressed genuine concern about providing U.S. foreign assistance. To that point, is it fair to say that the president has wanted to ensure that American taxpayer money was being effectively and efficiently spent outside of the United States?
Yes, that is the broad intent of the Foreign Assistance Review, among other goals.
And has the president expressed that he expects our allies to give their fair share of foreign aid, as evidenced by a point that he raised during the July 25th phone call with President Zelensky to that effect?
The principle of greater burden sharing by allies and other like-minded states is an important element of the Foreign Assistance Review.
Is it fair to say that in the Trump administration, U.S. Aid is withheld from foreign countries for a number of factors?
Correct.
And you've testified in your prior testimony that it is normal to have delays on aid.
I may have said it that way, but it is certainly an occurrence. It does occur.
In the past year, Ukraine was not the only country to have aid withheld from it. Is that correct?
Correct.
In the past year, was aid withheld from Pakistan?
Yes, sir.
Why was aid withheld from Pakistan?
Because of unhappiness over the policies and behavior of the Pakistani government toward certain proxy groups that were involved in conflicts with the United States.
And in the past year, was aid also withheld from Honduras?
Aid was withheld from the three states in northern Central America, yes.
In the past year, was aid withheld from Lebanon?
Yes, sir.
And when aid was first withheld from Lebanon, were you given a reason why it was withheld?
No.
So having no explanation for why aid is being withheld is not uncommon?
I would say it is not the normal way that we function.
But does happen?
It does happen.
And is it true that when aid was being withheld from Lebanon, that was at the same time aid was being withheld from Ukraine?
Correct, sir.
And you've testified that the aid to Lebanon still hasn't been released. Is that right?
That is correct.
All right. But the aid to Ukraine was released on September 11th, correct?
I read that, yes.
All right. So it's fair to say that aid has been withheld from several countries across the globe for various reasons, and in some cases for reasons that are still unknown, just in the past year.
Correct, sir.
So the assertion's been made that President Trump's Ukraine policy changed when there was a pause in the aid, or the aid was withheld. Is that an accurate statement?
That was not the way I understood things to be happening at the time. We were not given an explanation.
And in terms of our policy, in terms of aid to Ukraine, you've described it as very robust.
Our aid to Ukraine?
Yes.
Yes.
As evidenced by President Trump's policy decision to provide lethal defensive weapons, Javelin missiles.
It was very robust, yes, sir.
And that was a decision that President Trump made that the prior administration, President Obama, had not done. Lethal weapons had not been provided to Ukraine in the Obama administration, correct?
I was not involved in Ukrainian affairs during the Obama administration, so I don't feel competent to address that.
And when aid to Ukraine was put on pause, I believe you've testified that there may have been concern by Secretary Kent and by Ambassador Taylor that it was contributing to a potentially negative effect on U.S.-Ukraine relations. Do you agree with that?
Well, the State Department position was to advocate for the continuation of that assistance as an important element, in fact, a key element of our strategy to support Russia, support Ukraine against Russia.
Mr. Himes. Ms. Cooper, under our Constitution, it's the Congress, not the President, that controls the power of the purse, correct?
Yes, sir.
And the security assistance that was, the assistance that was authorized to Ukraine was authorized and appropriated by the Congress, correct?
Yes, sir.
So Congress is also concerned about corruption. It wants to ensure that American foreign assistance is spent wisely and does not worsen corruption. And so when Congress authorized this money, it built in conditions, just as Mr. Ratcliffe suggested. By law, Ukraine wouldn't get all the money until it demonstrated that it had undertaken substantial anti-corruption reforms. Ms. Cooper, under the law, the Department of Defense works with the State Department and other agencies to establish anti-corruption benchmarks and determine whether Ukraine has sufficiently met those benchmarks, correct?
That's correct. That provision pertains to the Ukraine Security Assistance Initiative.
And that's a legally specified process. That's not the President in the Oval Office manifesting a general skepticism of foreign aid, right? That's
sir,
a process.
It is a congressionally mandated process, yes, sir.
So did that process take place for the DOD funding that was held up in July?
Sir, the process that took place for the certification took place prior to the May certification to the U.S. Congress.
So by the time President Trump froze the aid, the Department of Defense had spent weeks, if not months, determining that the Ukrainian government met every requirement in the law and made significant strides in combating corruption. Is that correct?
That is correct. We made that determination in May.
Now, in my remaining 30 seconds, just so that people understand what I referred to, in the 1970s, Richard Nixon just arbitrarily decided, I don't know if it was because he had a general skepticism of foreign aid or what his motives were, but Richard Nixon decided to hold up congressionally mandated aid. And as a result, Congress went to work and passed the Impoundment Control Act of 1974, which prohibits the president from withholding congressionally appropriated funds without the approval of Congress for any reason. Is that correct, Ms. Cooper?
Sir, I am not a lawyer, but that approximates my understanding of the provision of the impoundment.
Mr. Conaway.
DOD certification was not corruption writ large throughout the entire country of Ukraine. It was narrowly focused on defense institutional reforms and combat capability. Isn't that correct, Ms. Cooper?
That's correct, sir.
So the certification in May didn't really speak to the broader concept of corruption throughout the rest of Ukraine that the president would be familiar with, or the rest of us would be familiar with.
Sir, the May certification was specific to the defense sector, defense industry, and it did reference the importance of civilian control of the military, which relates more broadly to.
Right, but I think all of us would argue, or none of us, I think, would argue that fixes corruption throughout the rest of the country. Ms. Cooper, maybe you can shed some light on the specific details. We talk about the security assistance program, $250 million. Some would argue that because of the pause, that people died in August because of the pause. Can you help us understand exactly what obligated, and was there things that were about to be delivered to Ukraine? Was Ukraine out of ammunition? Were they out of javelins? Were they out of all this stuff? And that because of this pause, they didn't get certain lethal equipment that they needed in order to protect their folks during the month of August?
Sir, we will deliver all of the equipment.
I understand. I was trying to get a timeline.
There was no shortfall in equipment deliveries that were expected within that time frame. Obligate means that you're putting the funding on contract.
Okay, and that's
and
contracts.
You're starting the process.
Yeah, those contracts will be fulfilled fourth quarter, perhaps, or whatever it was.
Sir, I have to say I'm a policy official. I am not a contracting expert. But my understanding is that we will be able to make up for lost time in the contracting process.
Fantastic.
Ms. Sewell.
When did you actually find out about the hold on the Ukraine assistance? Was it July 21st?
Yes, I in the deposition that I did, the closed hearing, I misspoke. I was confused, and I confused June 21st, which was when state first sent the CN up to the congressional notification to OMB for clearance. It was only after about July 18, and I think the 21st is when I heard that there was a potential hold.
Thank you for that clarification. Now, did you attend the July 26th deputies meeting, deputies committee meeting that occurred?
Yes, I did.
Was it also your understanding that the president directed the hold?
We were told in that meeting by the OMB representative that they were objecting to proceeding with the assistance because the president had so directed through the chief of staff, acting chief of staff.
What was the State Department's position regarding the hold?
State Department advocated, as I did in that meeting, for proceeding with all of the assistance consistent with our policies and interests in Ukraine.
You believed what you said? You believed in the release of the hold?
Yes, I did.
Did anyone at the interagency meeting at the end of July support the hold? Did anybody want the hold to remain? And if so, who? What agency?
The only agency represented in the meeting that indicated that they supported the hold was OMB.
Ms. Cooper, did you understand similarly that there was an overwhelming interagency consensus to lift the hold and that OMB, at the direction of the president, was the only roadblock?
Yes, ma'am.
How is the security assistance in the national security interests of the United States? What is our interest? Explain that to my constituents in Alabama who are wondering why we should care about the security, the hold that's on the security assistance.
Yes, ma'am. This specific assistance helps build the capacity of the Ukrainian armed forces. And it's important to understand that these are forces that are fighting to defend themselves against Russian aggression every day. It's an ongoing war. So they do need this equipment to support their ability to defend themselves. And I would say there's a larger issue here that relates to U.S. policy on Russia. We believe it's very important to strengthen the capacity of Ukraine in order to deter Russian aggression elsewhere around the world.
Exactly. Were you ever able to get a reason why that hold was on? Did you ever get a reason?
No, ma'am. The only thing that I heard about it, but this is, again, you know, second, third hand, was that the president was concerned about corruption. But that was all I ever heard.
So would you, were you ever provided any additional information about the reason for the hold?
No, ma'am.
I thank you, and I yield the balance of my time to the chairman.
I thank the gentlewoman. My colleagues in the minority asked Mr. Hale, isn't it common to have holds on military aid? And I think you said they're not unusual. Would you agree, though, that it would be very unusual to place a hold on military aid in order to leverage a foreign country to get them to investigate a political opponent?
Yes.
And I take it you would agree that that would be completely inappropriate.
That would be inconsistent with the conduct of our foreign policy in general.
And it would also be wrong, wouldn't it?
Certainly not what I would do.
Mr. Carson.
Would you say that Ukrainian forces were outmatched by Russia's military in critical ways?
Absolutely.
Are the Ukrainian forces now completely self-sufficient in your mind, essentially in their ability to deter Russian aggression?
No, sir. They have a long way to go.
Would you say that the Ukrainian armed forces now are now completely self-sufficient? Or how much of an impact does the U.S. need to have in terms of that deterrence, and how critical is the relationship between both Ukraine and the U.S.?
Sir, the Ukrainians are on the right path to be able to provide for their own security, but they will still need U.S. and allied support for quite some time. And they need that support in the form of, you know, tangible assistance as well as political and diplomatic support.
So this question is to the both of you. Why was Russia's illegal annexation of Crimea so significant in your mind? Madam Cooper?
Russia violated the sovereignty of Ukraine's territory. Russia illegally annexed territory that belonged to Ukraine. They also denied Ukraine access to its naval fleet at the time. And to this day, Russia is building a capability on Crimea designed to expand Russian military power projection far beyond the immediate region.
In 2014, were there concerns in Washington, here in Washington, and European capitals that Russia might not stop in Ukraine?
I was not in my current position in 2014, but it is my understanding that there was significant fear about where Russian aggression would stop.
So what about today? If the U.S. were to withdraw its military support of Ukraine, what would effectively happen?
It is my belief that if we were to withdraw our support, it would embolden Russia. It would also validate Russia's violation of international law.
And which country stands to benefit the most, would stand to benefit the most from such a withdrawal?
Russia.
Dr. Winstrup.
So one of the things on page 3 tonight, you were talking about a meeting July 26th, and after that you said, I was aware the national security community expressed unanimous support for resuming the funding as in the U.S. national security interests. That's correct? You said that tonight?
That's correct, sir.
So I guess I take a little question with resuming, because we don't want to resume as is. Would that be correct? Because as is would not include javelins.
Sir, I'm not sure I'm following.
Well, what I was going to say, in the previous administration, javelins were not provided, even though they could have been. President Obama stopped the javelins. He could have delivered javelins, let's put it that way.
Sir, I think I should clarify what I meant by that statement. Resuming was just referring to the fact that OMB had placed a hold on the assistance, so we weren't spending.
Okay.
And I wanted to resume the spending.
Okay.
Well, so that we could maintain this policy, okay. Maintain the strength.
Maintain the policy, but I guess what I'm asking, there is a difference, and I think Under Secretary Hale, you might, I thought I saw you nodding, the difference being that as it's resumed in this case, now it included javelins, which the Obama administration denied. Is that correct?
It is true that the Trump administration approved the release of defensive lethal assistance to include javelin, whereas the previous administration did not support that policy.
Ms. Speer.
Nothing really changes from May until September that would then trigger the release of the money, except a whistleblower came forward.
Ma'am, I do not know what triggered the release of the funding.
All right. The difference, as I see it, in Ukraine as compared to these other countries, is that Ukraine is engaged in a hot war with Russia right now. And it seems that withholding that money was irresponsible, considering that they had made all of this, taken steps to meet all the conditions that we had requested of them, and Congress had appropriated the funds. Is that not the case?
Ma'am, I and my DOD colleagues advocated strenuously for the release of these funds because of their national security importance.
Mr. Stewart.
There's a question about these emails that I think they claimed withholding, described withholding the aid, and they had come from Capitol Hill or from someone on the Foreign Affairs Committee. Is that true?
Sir, are you referring to my statement today or something previous?
I believe this is previous, a question we had previous. Are you aware of such an email?
I'm sorry, I don't think I have enough information to make an assessment. Is it from a particular page in my deposition?
No, it's just reporting that we've heard that there may have been communications with you with someone on the Foreign Affairs Committee on the Hill. Is that not true?
That there may have been communications with me?
Yes, email with you.
Sir, I'm not aware.
Okay, thank you. And for clarification as well, someone may have asked you or queried you from the Ukrainian embassy about the withholding of aid. Is that true? Did you hear from them?
Sir, I testified earlier that the communication from the Ukrainian embassy was to my staff, and my staff mentioned this to me after my deposition. The only specific communication that I recollect with the Ukrainians about this specific issue was on, I believe it was September 5th, at a reception at the Ukrainian embassy.
And just to bore down on that just a little bit, was that just a query generally about the forthcoming aid, or was it specific regarding them being aware that the aid was being withheld?
Sir, just to be clear, the September 5th conversation that I had was specific to the hold. There was an awareness of that, and there was a question of concern.
Okay, thank you. Do you think it was right that President Trump would test, is a word I think used previously, that he would test President Zelensky prior to providing some of the security assistance?
The President Zelensky was new.
Yes.
I had met him in February. I was impressed by him. But I think it was understandable for the administration, as a new president in Ukraine was coming to office, to understand better what that president's policies would be and attitude toward the United States.
Mr. Quigley.
Did the State Department or Department of Defense ask you for your information, or did they coordinate with you to get information you had?
Sir, I was told not to destroy anything, and our IT personnel have been collecting documents, is my understanding. So that occurs without the individual having to.
But they were collecting it and passing it on to state or DOD, is that correct?
I'm sorry, sir, could you repeat that?
You said your department was collecting it. Well, they weren't passing that on to you, they were passing it on to the State Department?
Sir,
or the Department of Defense?
This is what they reported to me. I have not seen the documents that have been collected. I only know those documents that I have produced or that my staff has brought to my attention or that I have received. So, no, I do not know what has happened with the documents that have been collected.
Same general question to you, sir.
I requested and was granted access to documents that I either originated or that had been sent to me that were relevant to the pertinent matters of this investigation during a finite time period. I don't have really information about what else is going on in terms of other documents that I did not produce or that I did not receive. There was a move to gather them, and I understood generally, indirectly, and informally that they have been gathered. That's the extent of my knowledge. It's not my area of responsibility.
Yes, but did they pass them on to you, or did they pass them on to the administration and somehow?
The only documents I received, sir, were those within the parameters I described. What I requested, which was those and given, were the documents that either I produced or that were sent to me relevant to the matters we're discussing today.
Ms. Stefanik.
Ms. Cooper, I wanted to start with you. You spoke eloquently of the threat of Russia when it illegally annexed Crimea, how that's a threat not only to Ukraine, but it's also a threat to Europe and the United States, a national security challenge. And I sit on the House Armed Services Committee. We know that the most important support for Ukraine in terms of lethal defensive aid is in the forms of javelins. Would you agree with that? Yes, ma'am. And which administration were those javelins made available to Ukraine?
This administration, the Trump administration.
And not the Obama administration.
That is correct.
Both of you, have you ever spoken with the president about Ukraine aid?
No, I have not.
No, ma'am.
Undersecretary Hale, you testified that you had no direct knowledge of any nefarious motivations to withhold aid to Ukraine, correct?
Correct.
And to your knowledge, you testified that there were no strings attached to the aid, correct? That's page 184 of your deposition.
Yeah, no such knowledge.
And more specifically, you testified that you had no knowledge of Ukraine aid being held up for investigations. Is that correct?
Correct.
During the temporary hold of security assistance, this was until Ambassador Taylor sent you the cable, you had never even heard the words Burisma or Biden, correct?
Well, in the context of what we're discussing, correct.
And you also testified that when you served as ambassador to Pakistan, security assistance was also held for their failure to conform to our concerns regarding terrorists and other issues on the Afghan-Pakistan border.
Correct.
You testified that this review had been going on for quite a while, and the administration did not want to take a business-as-usual approach to foreign assistance, a feeling that once a country has received a certain assistance package, it's something that continues forever. And you continued, the program had to be evaluated that they were actually worthy beneficiaries of our assistance, that our program made sense, that we avoid nation-building strategies, and that we provide assistance to countries that are lost in terms of our policy to our adversaries. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And you testified that you warmly welcomed this assistance review.
Correct.
Mr. Swalwell, it's your testimony now that after an employee came forward to you, you believe you have some evidence that the Ukrainians first inquired about security assistance to someone in your office on July 25 of this year. Is that right?
That's correct.
And July 25 is also the day that President Trump officially talked to President Zelensky where investigations of the Bidens were brought up. Is that right?
Sir, I only know what has been reported publicly on this.
And that was reported. Is that right?
That's correct.
Second, this president, as a champion of anti-corruption, your testimony today is that on May 23, you certified that as far as it related to your duties, Ukraine had met the corruption concerns for the aid to be released. Is that right?
Sir, the Defense Department certified.
And after that date, inexplicably, the President of the United States puts a hold on security assistance. Is that right?
That was what I heard in July, yes.
Now, this anti-corruption president who cares so much about rooting out corruption in Ukraine, did he ever call you after he put the hold to say, Ms. Cooper, what's going on in Ukraine?
No, sir.
Ambassador Hale, did he ever call you to ask about an update on Ukraine corruption?
No, sir.
To your knowledge, did he ever call your boss, Secretary Pompeo?
I don't know.
Ms. Cooper, did he ever call the many bosses that you've had at the Department of Defense? The secretaries or acting secretaries?
I don't know, sir.
Now as to the justification. The justification is that the Obama administration only provided blankets, so the Ukrainians should be grateful, even after being shaken down, that the Trump administration provided more. But the truth, Ms. Cooper, is that under the Obama administration and the European Reassurance Initiative, $175 million were provided from U.S. taxpayer dollars to the Ukrainians. Is that right?
Sir, I don't have that figure. The figure that we typically use is to say we've provided $1.6 billion to date. But I don't have the breakdown in front of me.
And the Obama administration also trained 5 military battalions of the Ukrainians. Is that correct?
Again, I don't have the figures in front of me, but yes, the training program began in the Obama administration, and we did train many forces.
And under the Obama administration founded Ukrainian Security Assistance Initiative provided to the Ukrainians were armored Humvees, tactical drones, night vision devices, armored vests, and medical equipment. Is that correct?
These all sound like pieces of equipment that were provided in the Obama administration, to my recollection.
You'd agree that's a lot more than blankets, right?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Hurd.
You said in your deposition, and you just confirmed with my colleague from California that you certified on 23 May that the Ukraine aid for the review of their defense industry and Department of Defense, you know, was passed the corruption test. Is that correct?
Kind of an anti-corruption test per se.
Did this change, or was there a reevaluation with a new president coming in? Because President Zelensky was inaugurated in office 2 days before that date, did that have an impact on how he was going to continue some of those pieces? Was that taken into account in this review?
Not prior to May 23rd, no, sir.
So the review was basically done on the efforts done by the previous Poroshenko administration?
Yes, sir, although it's important to note that the review related most specifically to the Ministry of Defense.
Sure, sure, but there were ultimately changes under the Zelensky regime, is that correct?
Yes, sir, there's a new Minister of Defense.
Can you explain, I know FMF, Foreign Military Financing, is State Department's, but can you explain the difference between FMF and USAI funding and also how the Ukrainians get lethal aid?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the last part of that? Also, how the Ukrainians
actually get lethal aid, because is lethal aid covered under one of these two buckets?
So there are three separate pieces to our overall ability to provide equipment to the Ukrainian armed forces. The first is the Foreign Military Finance System, which is a State Department authority, and countries around the world have this authority. That authority is used for some of the training and equipment. There's also the Ukraine Security Assistance Initiative. That's a DoD authority. Unlike the state authority, the DoD authority is only a one-year authority. And then third, there's the opportunity for defense sales. And that is something that we're working with the Ukrainians on now so that they can actually purchase U.S. equipment. But the Javelin specifically was provided under FMF initially, and now the Ukrainians are interested in the purchase of Javelin.
And there wasn't a hold put on purchasing of equipment, is that correct?
Not to my understanding, no.
Mr. Castro.
And I want to ask you, Ms. Cooper, you said that the money was cleared to go by the DOD on May 23rd, is that right?
That's correct.
And it didn't get released until September 11th?
Yes, I should just clarify the second half of the Ukraine Security Assistance Initiative was notified to Congress on, I believe it was, May 23rd, and then there was a waiting period for congressional approval. And then after that point, so in kind of mid-June, roughly, it was available for...
So perhaps 90 days or so, 95 days, something like that.
Yes, I don't have a calendar in front of me, but that sounds right.
Well, you both testified that the hold on security assistance was not in the national security interest of the United States, and that the hold might embolden Russia. We've heard the same from numerous other witnesses that have come before us. But this was not the only issue with the hold, right? We understand that people within the United States government had significant concerns about the legality of the hold as it relates to the Impoundment Control Act. This is because the money had been authorized by Congress and signed into law by President Trump. Ms. Cooper, at the July meetings, were there any discussions about whether the hold could be implemented in a legal fashion?
So in the July 26th meeting, my leadership raised the question of how the president's guidance could be implemented and proffered that perhaps a reprogramming action would be the way to do this, but that more research would need to be done. So then after that discussion, we had a lower level discussion at my level on the 31st of July.
And let me ask you about that July 31st meeting. Based on your conversations with colleagues at the DOD at the July 31st interagency meeting, did you share your understanding of the legal mechanisms that were available at that time?
Yes, sir.
And what were they?
I expressed that it was my understanding that there were two ways that we would be able to implement presidential guidance to stop obligating the Ukraine Security Assistance Initiative. And the first option would be for the president to do a rescission. The second is a reprogramming action that the Department of Defense would do.
And both of those would require congressional notice.
Yes, sir.
There would be an extra step that the president would have to take to notify Congress. As far as you know, was there ever any notice that was sent out to Congress?
Sir, I did express that that I believed it would require a notice to Congress,
right,
and that then there was no such notice to my knowledge, or preparation of such a notice to my knowledge.
And as far as you know, there was never any official rescission or reprogramming of that money?
No, sir, not to my knowledge.
Instead, what happened was OMB devised an alternative solution involving creative footnotes to implement the hold. And there came a time in August when the Department of Defense no longer supported these unusual footnotes because of concerns that there might not be sufficient time for DOD to obligate the funds before the end of the fiscal year in violation of the Impoundment Control Act. So despite DOD's concerns in mid-August about the Impoundment Control Act and OMB's footnotes, the hold nevertheless continued through September 11th, even after, now as an aside, this is even after the whistleblower had come forward. Is that right?
It is correct that the hold was released on September 11th, yes.
Mr. Ratcliffe, it's being widely reported that Ukraine asked about the hold on military aid on July 25th. That's not what I heard from you. Is that correct?
Sir, my exact words were that one email said that the Ukrainian embassy and the House Foreign Affairs Committee are asking about security assistance.
Assistance. Not hold.
And then the second email was, the Hill knows about the FMF situation to an extent, and so does the Ukrainian embassy. Those are the exact words.
And what do security assistance and FMF situation in these emails mean?
I don't want to speculate on what it means.
Right. They don't necessarily mean hold, correct?
Not necessarily.
And isn't it true that around the same time, OMB put a hold on 15 State Department and USAID accounts, including FMF?
I don't know that specific detail.
But you can't say one way or another whether the inquiries in these emails were about the hold. Is that fair?
I cannot say for certain.
All right. And you can't say one way or another whether the Ukrainians knew about the hold before August 28th, 2019, when it was reported in Politico, correct?
Sir, I can just tell you that it's the recollection of my staff that they likely knew, but no, I do not have a certain data point to offer you.
Well, it's not unusual, is it, Ms. Cooper, for foreign countries to inquire about foreign aid that they're expecting from the United States, is it?
Sir, in my experience with the Ukrainians, they typically would call about specific things, not just generally checking in on their assistance package.
Are you aware that President Zelensky on October 10th, in response to questions from more than 300 reporters over the course of the afternoon, stated that he was not aware and had no knowledge of a hold on security assistance during the time of his July 25th phone call with President Trump?
I believe I saw that media reporting, yes.
I yield back.
Mr. Heck.
I'm offering you the opportunity to reaffirm to this committee and the millions of Americans, hopefully, who are watching, that Marie Yovanovitch is a dedicated and courageous patriot, and that she served with grace and dignity even in the face of that orchestrated and unsubstantiated smear attack against her. Ambassador Hale, I'm giving you the opportunity to demonstrate leadership. I'm giving you the opportunity to send a clear and resounding message to the men and women who serve in dangerous foreign posts throughout the globe that what happened to Marie Yovanovitch was wrong. Ambassador Hale, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Congressman. Excuse me. I endorse entirely your description of Ambassador Yovanovitch. I'd only met her when I took this job, but immediately I understood that we had an exceptional officer doing exceptional work at a very critical embassy in Kyiv. And during my visit to Kyiv, I was very impressed by what she was doing there to the extent that I asked her if she'd be willing to stay, if that was a possibility, because we had a gap coming up. I support and believe in the institution and the people of the State Department. I am one of them. I have been for 35 years. All of us are committed to America's national security, and we are the best group of diplomats anywhere in the world. And that support extends to all state officers who have testified before this committee. If I may, I'd like to read a letter that the Undersecretary for Management wrote on November 18 to the ranking member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee in response to a communication from him. A number of department employees have testified before the House of Representatives during its inquiry regarding Ukraine. No employee has faced any adverse action by the department for testimony before Congress on this matter. The department will not discipline any department employee for appearing before Congress in response to a subpoena. The department has also proactively established a program to provide financial assistance with respect to private counsel legal fees incurred by department employees. There's additional information, but that's the essence of the message.
Ambassador Hale, then, therefore, are you saying Marie Yovanovitch is a dedicated and courageous patriot?
I endorse what you say exactly. I think
and then that she served with grace and dignity in the face of the smear campaign?
Yes, she did.
And that what happened to her was wrong?
I believe that she should have been able to stay at post and continue to do the outstanding work.
And what happened to her was wrong?
That's right.
Mr. Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Cooper, the why did the Office of Management and Budget put a hold on the funds?
Sir, the only information that I received was from the Office of Management and Budget that they were operating at the direction of the President, and they reported that he had concerns about corruption. That is all that I knew.
All right, you put that in your testimony.
Mr. Welch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Undersecretary Hale, I want to go back to your support and affirmation of Ambassador Yovanovitch. What I understand, and by the way, thank you for that. You know, our military leaves nobody on, no soldier on the battlefield, and I think those who are in leadership positions in the State Department and our intelligence community have that bond of loyalty to each other, and it's very reassuring that you represent that. You first, as I understand it, got information about her situation in March. By early March, Secretary Pompeo had mentioned that sometime in the fall he'd received a letter from a former member of Congress with complaints about the ambassador, correct? And that, member of Congress was?
Congressman Sessions.
And did you see that there was any basis to the claims of disloyalty?
No, I did not, nor did the Secretary of State.
All right. And you visited Kyiv, and you discussed, in fact, extending Ambassador Yovanovitch's term until to remain at her post, right?
It was a personal idea of mine, yes.
Obviously, an indication that you valued her continued service there. And you also stated to the Ukrainian press that Ambassador Yovanovitch represents the President of the United States here in the Ukraine, and America stands behind her statements, obviously trying to give her some public support, correct?
Correct.
And yet, weeks later, the President and Mr. Giuliani unleashed what can only be characterized as an ugly smear campaign to oust her. What was your reaction to the news articles in late March in which a corrupt Ukrainian prosecutor attacked the ambassador?
Well, we were concerned. We put out a statement that some of these allegations were an outright fabrication as they related to the do not prosecute list.
Right.
And we began to discuss what we could do to deal with this matter.
Right. And then the problems continued for Ambassador Yovanovitch. And as I understand it, she emailed you on March 24th and indicated that, quote, the tempo of social media and other criticisms were such that she felt she could no longer function unless there was a strong statement of defense of her from the State Department. Is that correct?
Correct.
And this message, and Secretary Pompeo was aware of her situation. Is that correct?
Yes, I briefed him the next day.
And he's the ultimate authority who could issue that strong statement of support, correct?
Correct.
But he never, ever did issue a statement, right?
We did not issue a statement at that time.
But in fact, you testified around the same time that the secretary did not render assistance to a long-serving and highly respected ambassador. He made two phone calls to Rudy Giuliani. Is that right?
It's correct that I've seen a record that he made those phone calls.
One on March 28 and again the next day on March 29.
I saw the record of that, yes.
Right. So we don't know what he said to Rudy Giuliani, but we have a pretty good idea what Rudy Giuliani said to him. Get rid of Yovanovitch. She was gone and the statement never came forward, right?
Correct.
And when she was recalled and wanted to find out what happened, Secretary Pompeo would not meet with her?
Right? I was out of the country at the time. I can't comment on that.
All right. Well, and then Mr. Breckbuehl, who was next in line, didn't meet with her?
I don't know this.
Well, then it came for you to give her the news.
It went to the deputy secretary, I believe, held the meeting. I was on foreign travel at the time.
Well, it'd be interesting if we could have Secretary Pompeo be here to tell us what his conversations were with Rudy Giuliani, the person who was fomenting the discontent about an ambassador who was fighting corruption.
Mr. Maloney.
Ms. Cooper, was DOD able to put all the security system funds into contract before the end of the fiscal year?
No, sir.
And how much were they not able to obligate? What was left unobligated?
I believe the figure was $35 million. We were able to actually obligate 88% total.
And I think you mentioned that you were able, because of legislation the Congress passed, continuing resolution, to do that. Is that right?
So the remainder, we are in the process of obligating right now because of the provision in the continuing resolution.
Right. So, but for literally an act of Congress, you couldn't have spent all the money.
If we had not received the provision in the continuing resolution, we would have obligated 88%, but not the full amount.
Right. Which, of course, would be a violation of law. To not spend money that Congress appropriated.
Sir, I am not a lawyer, but that is my understanding.
Sure.
Ms. Demings.
Ambassador Hale, Ms. Cooper, thank you both for being with us. Just a quick question before I get into some questions about Ambassador Sondland, who we heard from today. I want to ask both of you, if President Trump withheld critical military aid from Ukraine because high-ranking officials supported the president's political opponent, would you consider that an official, acceptable, appropriate action by the president of the United States? Ambassador Hale?
It's not what I would advise.
Ms. Cooper?
No, that does not sound appropriate.
Ambassador Hale, you testified that you were aware Ambassador Sondland was involving himself in matters that, and I quote, went beyond the normal writ of an ambassador to the European Union, unquote. As you understood it, who authorized Ambassador Sondland to work on Ukraine?
I have no firsthand knowledge of that. I received a readout from a meeting that the President of the United States had with the delegation on May 23rd, in which the briefing I received anyway indicated that the President wanted the members of that delegation, which included Ambassador Sondland, to carry forth the policies that were discussed in the course of that meeting.
So that occurred in a meeting in the Oval Office on May 23rd is where you heard that information from the readout of that
meeting. A written readout from that, yes.
You testified that, and I quote, it was clear that the members of that inaugural delegation were empowered by the president. That's what you testified. You also said, and I quote, as a practical matter, it would be Ambassador Volker and Ambassador Sondland, presumably working with Taylor, who would be the ones really doing the continual effort here. Did you understand that Ambassador Sondland had direct access to the president?
In the few occasions in which I had conversations with Ambassador Sondland, he often would let it know that he was in direct contact with the president. That's all I knew.
So you received that information directly from Ambassador Sondland, that he had direct contact with the president?
In previous occasions, yes. Not related to this particular matter.
Is there anything about Ambassador Sondland's role that struck you as problematic?
Based on what I knew at the time, I was satisfied that this delegation was what the president wanted to have, you know, continue to pursue these policies. And I saw that Ambassador Volkland, who was a professional, had been a foreign service officer and an ambassador of distinction, and steeped in Ukrainian affairs, was part of that group. So I had no great concerns.
So what you knew at the time, you were okay with his role, but did your opinion change about the appropriateness of his role?
As I testified, I was not aware of these various activities related to negotiations over investigations, preconditions related to that. I just wasn't aware of it, so I had no reason to be making any kind of judgment one way or the other.
Have you reviewed the text messages between Ambassadors Sondland and Volker?
I've seen some of them that were reported in the media.
Were you surprised by anything in those messages that you heard reported or personally witnessed or observed?
I was surprised by what I saw in those reports in the media.
I want to ensure I understand your testimony, Ambassador Hale. You believed Ambassador Sondland was empowered by the president, according to what you found out from the May 23rd meeting, to work on Ukraine policy, and you said, quote, none of that really struck you as problematic because of the time differences there of what you knew. Is that correct?
Based on what I knew, yes.
Okay. You are the Undersecretary for Political Affairs. You testified that in that capacity, you are responsible for the management of the United States bilateral relations with, and I quote, every country in the world that we recognize for the management of our policies towards those countries, as well as our relationship or policies as they relate to multilateral organizations. Does that include U.S. policy and relations with Ukraine?
It does, but when we have a special envoy who reports directly to the secretary related to a country or an issue, that special envoy will take the day-to-day responsibilities.
How about U.S. policy and relations with the European Union?
Yes, I am.
But you were not aware fully of Ambassador Sondland's activities on behalf of President Trump?
That's correct.
Mr. Krishnamurthy.
Good evening. Thank you so much for being here. Undersecretary Hale, you and your colleagues testified that you've gathered official records at the State Department with the understanding that they would be provided to Congress, right?
I was not involved in the decision-making, or I have no responsibilities related to gathering documents. I understood that it was underway, and I've certainly received the documents that I described earlier.
I see. In terms of the materials that were collected, do they include electronic files and emails, for instance?
I can only speak to the documents that were made available to me, and it did include emails.
And paper documents as well?
And paper documents.
Would tape recordings potentially be among the files that are gathered?
I really couldn't speculate on that.
Yeah. But you can't rule out that possibility?
I don't know if tape recordings... So I can't really comment on that.
And are you familiar with from whom the documents have been collected, like the individual custodians?
I don't know that, sir.
You're aware that despite a duly authorized congressional subpoena has been served on the State Department, we have yet to receive even a single document, correct?
I understand that, yes.
Ms. Cooper, in the interagency process, did anyone in any committee potentially bring up the lack of allied funding as a reason for why there should be a hold on military assistance to Ukraine?
I can only speak to the three meetings that I attended, the PCC, DSG, and then PCC, and I have no recollection of the issue of allied burden sharing coming up at that point. I did provide information in my deposition about what I thought was a completely separate query that I received in mid-June from the Secretary of Defense's front office, and one of the questions there just asked a question about the degree to which allies were contributing to Ukraine security assistance, just to be very clear.
Okay, but after the hold was put in place on July 18th, you haven't heard any concerns about a lack of allied funding as a reason for why the hold should be in place?
In those meetings that I attended, I did not hear that, or I do not recall hearing that as a reason. The only reason that I heard was the president's views on corruption. No further information.
Got it. Same question to you, Undersecretary Hill.
Could you repeat the question, sir?
I assume you didn't hear about the lack of allied funding as a reason for the hold being put in place after July 18th.
No, I never heard a reason for the hold.
I assume neither of you heard any reason whatsoever for why the hold was in place, except for the fact that OMB put it in place at the direction of the president, right?
That's correct.
And I assume, you know, one of my colleagues brought up the idea that the hold was put in place to assess whether or not President Zelensky was legit. I assume that was not a reason that was offered either.
No, sir, I never heard that as a reason.
I heard no reason.
Undersecretary Hale, what is the importance of a world leader having a meeting at the White House?
Well, really, it's case by case, but particularly for a new leader, it's an extremely important opportunity to demonstrate the strength of our relationship, for building of that relationship at a personal level, leadership level, to demonstrate common goals.
How about in the case of President Zelensky? How important was it for him to have this a meeting at the White House with President Trump?
Well, I never talked to President Zelensky about that myself. I met him before he became president. I met with President Poroshenko and the two leading candidates.
But as an expert on these matters, is it fair to say that a new world leader such as President Zelensky having a meeting at the White House with President Trump is extremely important for his image that he projects, especially toward folks like Russia?
Well, an Oval Office meeting is incredibly valuable for any foreign leader. Let me just state that general principle. And for a Ukrainian president, it is indeed what you just said, to demonstrate that the bond between the United States and Ukraine is strong, and that there is continuity in our policies, and that we are going to continue to work together on our policy goals, including countering Russian aggression and intimidation of Ukraine.
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm.
The Lawfare podcast is produced in cooperation with the Brookings Institution. If you're not too tired from listening to all this testimony, you should take a second to share the Lawfare podcast on social media and give us a 5-star rating and review wherever you found us. You can also purchase Lawfare swag at our online store, www.thelawfarestore.com. The podcast is produced by Jen Pachia-Howell. I was your audio engineer and editor on this No Bull podcast. And our music, if we had it, which we don't on Noble Editions, is performed by Sophia Yan. As always, thanks for listening.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.